Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Double Shelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And today we're super excited to have a really fun discussion about extracurriculars in graduate school. We'll be covering things like how to take advantage of opportunities, how to make your own opportunities, and how to not waste your time. Because I think many of us, whether in graduate school or in other university settings or even in the workplace or just in our regular lives, have been like, this is going to be fun. And then like 6 months into it, you're like, this is my nightmare. This thing I don't need to be doing is ruining my life.
We're also going to talk about which of these experiences is most valuable for you and why, and valuable going forward with your career.
Absolutely. So the motivation for this episode, Kayla, do you want to tell a story about an infuriating time?
Yes, I do. Yeah, so there's two motivating factors for this episode. One is that I know personally when I entered graduate school, I was very confused about what should be the role of extracurricular activities as a graduate student. I was like, should I be spending all my time in the lab? Is it still okay to do other things outside of lab? What should those things be? Who even cares? Like, what should I do with my time? What are the opportunities?
And there's not a lot of unbiased guidance.
No.
Right? Like, if you ask a student who is a leader of a club trying to recruit you, they're going to say, this club is a very valuable experience. If you ask your mentor, they're going to say, you know, Sally, the most successful students are truly dedicated and do put in a lot of hours in the lab and don't really have a lot of outside opportunities that they're taking advantage of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you didn't have a lot of guidance as a new student.
Right. And this isn't something that's necessarily easy to Google because it's very niche specific.
Yeah, but if you found this episode through Googling, congratulations, you've come to the right place.
Yes. The other motivation is that it's important to have activities outside of graduate school for a variety of reasons. And in contrast to this, I, in my experience, most PIs that I have worked with have been supportive or at minimum indifferent to what their students do outside of the lab.
Absolutely.
It's their time and they recognize that and it's fine. But I have met at least one professor who strongly felt that students should not do anything outside of the lab to the point where they literally commented that yard work was a waste of time and that students should not have yards because that is taking away from their research.
Goodness gracious. Okay. So that's obviously a toxic behavior. And if you find yourself in that situation, I'm very sorry.
But if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not.
So. Yeah, like, I don't think we have a lot of toxic mentors among our listenership. But I think that when we talk about activities outside of the lab, before we get into our real discussion about extracurricular activities, which we think about as stuff that is sort of related to your training as a scientist or as a scholar and as a leader, but they're outside of your formal studies or requirements to graduate.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that in a little bit. So like these are like quasi-professional structured activities. So like being in the clubs, being mentoring, volunteer opportunities. What else?
Chairing a conference, doing some kind of advising for other students. Here we call it peer advising, leading orientations for new students, being part of committees.
So like professional service.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so those are sort of professional-ish ones, but I think it's very important to mention and sort of make a comparison with other things that students or trainees might be doing outside of a work environment. So like unstructured, in our outline, we wrote unstructured enjoyment / enrichment. This just means like fun, you guys. So like training for a marathon, or if you like watching TV, or if you're in a sports league, things that you just do for fun because they're fun and you like them. And then
hobbies.
Yeah, that's, you know, the fact that we couldn't come up with that word might tell you something about our lives and our hobbies. Also, outside of your work life, you have a family or real life responsibilities, which could include things like earning money, caregiving responsibilities, maintaining relationships, maintaining long distance relationships, and obviously maintaining your health, which is not always straightforward. Yeah. Like some people, this is a major struggle.
So we want to acknowledge that these activities are also a very important part of your life. But we're going to focus today on the extracurriculars, which are the ones that are related to academic training, but not necessarily part of your formal studies.
Right, or things that are related for training for your future career.
Yes.
Even if that's outside academia.
Right, I should say by academic training, the fact that you are a student.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, not necessarily training you to stay in academia. Sally, why are extracurriculars important in graduate school?
Okay, now this might be some news to some students, especially younger students, and especially people who were maybe PhD students a long time ago. But PhD programs do not provide complete training for any career, including becoming a professor. So a student who just goes through the paces of a PhD, and even a student who's quite successful with all the resume activities of success, like papers and publications, and like lab techniques mastered, is going to have a hard time finding faculty positions because, rightfully so, universities are identifying that, you know, faculty should probably have experience teaching, because that's what they're paid to do, and mentoring students, and interacting with colleagues and engaging in productive change regarding inclusion and diversity. So all these kinds of things are necessary to be a professor. And outside of academia, which frankly, the majority of PhD students will end up, I mean, unless you're getting a PhD in science policy, you're not learning about that in your lab, or all these myriad of jobs, you basically need to take a lot of training. Like a lot of your training burden is on you, and your program isn't going to be providing that. But fortunately, as a PhD student, you can still make this work.
Yeah. And I'll give an example. Even thinking toward a academic career as faculty, I felt like there was a lot of those kinds of tasks that you don't learn from being at the bench how many hours a week, and took an opportunity to do a preparation, like a mini course for
a future faculty preparation course.
Exactly.
Because Kayla is a future faculty, so please hire her.
Yes, please. But, you know, soon.
No, it's never too soon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I participated in one of these. It's not something that counted toward my degree requirements or in any way, shape, will really benefit my CV per se, but it gave me a lot of valuable insight into how the application process works. And even though I'm planning to look at or do a postdoc beforehand, I think understanding how that process works has given me a lot more focus for what I need to be doing in the meantime.
And like what kind of postdoc to pick or what kind of postdoc mentor. And for me, a similar example would be I, over the summer, went to a conference, ComSciCon, which is all about science communication for and by graduate students. And that was a really interesting conference to learn just more. I mean, it sounds cheesy to say that the point of the conference was to learn about opportunities in science communication and like what it means to be a science communication professional. But I like literally had no idea, and now I do. So that was like 2 days away from my life that I'm never getting back in terms of lab work, but like countless hours saved in terms of investing in learning about that on my own time. So PhD programs have a lot of flexible time. So basically, it's a rare opportunity that you have a flexible schedule during the regular workday. So you can use this to record a podcast episode at a time that you and your guest are mutually available, or to like organize things, or to go on an informational interview. And no one is really monitoring what you're doing in each hour of the day. No, and if they are, that's another sign of a potentially toxic workplace. And we support you.
Yeah, so you have the opportunity to do some of these activities that you wouldn't be able to do with a regular 9-to-5 job, per se.
Yeah. I think part of a reason that I hear from especially lots of younger students, it's very exciting. You arrive to graduate school, you're able to join a lab, and you're really excited about your work. And obviously, like, you look around you, and you're like, it seems as if everyone is working so hard all the time. And I think a lot of students have a hesitation to participate in extracurricular activities, despite like a nebulous idea that they might be important, which we'll get into in a minute about how important they are. But they have an inclination to participate in activities, but they're hesitant because they worry that their mentor is not going to be supportive, or that their mentor will view this negatively. And it's true that there are some haters out there amongst the mentors and the PIs of this world, but let's just give some listeners some sort of reinforcement, like from the perspective of a PI or mentor, Kayla, like why should you support or at least be ambivalent about your trainees participating in extracurricular activities?
Yeah, so most mentors, in my experience, again, have been really supportive of these kinds of activities. And one of the reasons is that, first of all, they recognize that their job is to train you to be a scientist, and that training, especially for careers outside of academia, can't possibly come exclusively from them.
And they probably don't want to be training you for a career in science policy if that's not their expertise. Like, they don't want to be tracking down those resources and, like, bringing those networks to you. Like, they really, really don't.
Right.
So demonstrating to a mentor that you can do this yourself quite simply through an extracurricular club like the science policy group or other organization, like, it's a benefit to your mentor.
Yeah.
Because if you get a job, makes them look good.
Yes. Similarly, on the benefits to your mentor, the types of activities you can do is also can reflect well on them or bring skills back into the lab that might be useful. I shouldn't say the lab. Maybe bench work is a little bit.
Well, skills into the lab community.
Yeah, exactly.
For example.
Like communication.
Well, an example. So, real story, when we first started this podcast, my boss was like, big fan of the podcast, big fan of the work. And then he was like, how much do you spend on an episode? And this is before we had grants where we had to edit it ourselves. So I was like, yeah, I mean, honestly, it's sort of a nightmare. Editing this takes us like 9 hours. And he was like, oh, I don't know, Sally, like you should be really working. And I was like, okay, thank you. It was sort of tongue in cheek, but also not, you know. But then when we had our mentorship episode with special guest and amazing person, Julia Volsakis, which you should all listen to, two students joined the lab after listening to that episode and told my boss this. And now he is a very big supporter of the podcast, has nominated us for multiple awards.
Yes.
And he, like, frequently emails us to be like, can you please send a link to the imposter syndrome episode? I want to send it to a student who is struggling. And I'm like, yes, here you go.
Yes.
So I think it doesn't have to be, like, a transactional relationship with him, with your mentor, but if you can show that, you know, it's not always as obvious how extracurriculars are benefiting you besides like growing as a whole person and developing your non-quantifiable skills. But if you can, all the better, I guess.
And the last thing is that in reality, most PIs are hired for their research abilities, bottom line.
Yeah.
But they could have been researching in a lot of other settings that weren't academia. And for the large part, if they are working in academia, they have some genuine interest and investment in students and student training, etc. So they do actually want you to be successful in what you're doing.
And also for you to be happy and thriving, right? And I think it was Dr. Alliston who talked about a former guest on our podcast, Professor Tamara Alliston from UCSF. You should listen to her episode. It's like fire. It's incredible. But one of the things that she talked about that still resonates with me, and I think about this like at least once a week, is saying that in her own mentorship style, she recognizes that, you know, not every student is able to find the same amount of joy from the same, like, not every student finds joy in the same aspects of their scientific training. So she really works with each student to find, like, what motivates them and what gets them excited about the work, whether it's being able to travel to a conference, being able to, like, learn a new technique. Some students are very motivated, you know what I mean, by different writing or having opportunities to interact with other people. So just your mentor should be supportive of the things that help you find enjoyment, both in your science and in your life more generally. And so a student who's able to fulfill some of that creative need in an extracurricular activity can, even if it's very unrelated to the lab's work, can absolutely come back to their workplace as a more engaged and productive person. Because when we take time away, we're all the better when we're present. And I think the last thing about this is that, you know, your mentor doesn't own your time. So it's frankly none of their business, right? Like if you were training for a marathon, like we mentioned earlier, there's other responsibilities, right? Like if you were training for a marathon, your mentor wouldn't necessarily know. And they wouldn't necessarily tell you not to, right? So is there really a difference between spending your time running a billion hours a day for marathon training? I mean, obviously that would be a bad marathon strategy, but I've never done it, so I don't really know. Running a lot, spending a lot of time running to train for a marathon, or spending a lot of time writing articles for your amazing blog. I think there's this idea that, if you're going to be spending time writing, it should be for your research, not for your blog. But honestly, like, whatever can bring you creative fulfillment, I think go for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. So on that note, how involved should a graduate student be in extracurriculars to get the benefits? And how much time should they be spending? When is the right time? How many activities they should they do?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question, and it's something that a lot of students struggle with. And I think when you are very invested in your ex, like, there can be, like, obviously, if you realize that over a long period of time, your work is suffering because of your involvement in extracurricular activities, that absolutely you need to be very self-reflective on that and maybe take a step back. But I think a lot of times what can end up happening is your work isn't actually suffering, but maybe other aspects of your life are.
For
And
example, sleeping,
And I think
stress.
it's all about balance and timing. And also, have you ever had this experience, Kayla, where you get involved in an extracurricular activity and it's like very fun? And then you're like, they're like, you're an involved, fun person. And for me, they always say outspoken. True. Maybe for you, they say dedicated. So like, you're so great. Like, you should become a leadership in this organization. And you're like, sure. Like, this is fun. Like, cool. I'll
Leadership
be in
sounds like a
charge.
good
Leadership,
thing.
I could put that on my resume. Like, yes, okay. And then you become a leader in the organization. And then suddenly, like, a switch flips, and it's all about like attending a meeting to organize a meeting to plan an event that no one ultimately shows up to. Or
Oh, yeah.
sending an email to someone who doesn't do their thing, and after 3 weeks, you just have to do it for them, and then they respond, and it's like a whole thing, and then there's all this drama. Yeah, is
Oh,
this
yeah. Oh,
resonating? Okay,
yeah.
so I think when your stress about extracurricular activities and sort of an interpersonal slash workload thing is getting to you, you gotta drop it like it's hot.
Yes,
Okay,
it's not worth
like
it.
if that's your lab work and your collaborator who's giving you this kind of struggle, you
That's.
have to push through and do what you got to do. But if it's just like some random thing, extracurricular or otherwise, that's causing you like to stay up at night and to like flush your time down the toilet, solving petty dramas or whatever, it's like, this isn't worth it.
Yes,
Yes.
completely
All
agree.
right.
There are many
So
opportunities.
what about like timing of responsibilities? Like, grad school is a long time.
Yeah.
It's different for everyone, but is there any sort of patterns that you've seen in yourself or other students, Kayla, that you've been able to kind of identify as sort of working well or poorly for grad school timing, extracurriculars?
Patterns I have seen, and that has also applied true for my experience, is that most students have the most time in the first 2 to 3 years of their PhD.
Sure.
So that to me is the best time to get involved. And then you have the opportunity to scale back as you get further. So,
Yeah.
especially because in those first few years, you come in, you have a lot of energy, you're
You're not like
excited.
bogged down by the inevitability, by the inevitable stagnation of academia. Yeah, you know.
Especially in, for example, in our program, you're rotating. And so each time that you are starting and stopping a rotation, you have this kind of weird in-between
Like
time.
proto semester break thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So this is a great time to be doing activities outside of bench work. And also, this is the most beneficial time for you for later down the road. So this is when you can start building strong networks with your peers or with,
Meeting friends that aren't in your department.
yeah, exactly, who can then later tell you how to do a pull down essay that saves you a month of work.
True story.
yeah, true story. This builds you credibility for leadership positions if you do want to do some of those as
And
an older
fellowship,
PhD
like.
student. Yes, and this is a time where you're applying for a lot of fellowships most often, as and in particular the ones that care the most about your extracurricular activities. So,
right, like the NIH doesn't care, but the NSF does, to
right.
be blunt.
Yes. It's true. Right. So in particularly NSF, half of the application is broader impact. So,
right. Listen to our fellowship episode.
Yeah, our writing episode.
Writing episode, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the most beneficial time. And I personally, after the end of third year, have had a limit of not doing more than two ongoing extracurriculars at a time.
Yeah.
So working on this podcast is one of them.
That's one, yeah.
Yeah, and then whatever the other one, usually the other one has been something that's a little bit shorter term. So, for example, I was part of different committees in the department, stuff like that. And then I also became much, much more selective about the very short-term opportunities I would say yes to.
Oh, like being on a panel?
Right.
Okay, can I tell you about being on panels?
Tell us about being on panels.
Okay. All right, so I was on a lot of panels, okay? And I love grad school, so when they're like, I mean, you know, I love talking about grad school. Grad school is a great opportunity. So I do love grad school. So I'm on these panels about grad school for like whatever honor society of students. I'm not going to name names, or like little undergrad groups, right? They're hosting this event. So I'm finally in like my billionth panel, and I'm like taking a pulse of the audience. I'm like, okay, who's a freshman? Who's a junior? Who's a chemical engineer? Who's from bioengineering? Okay, who wants to go to grad school? Who wants to go to med school, etc.? Okay, I'm at this panel, and literally one person raises their hand when I ask, who wants to go to grad school? And I was like, this is a panel about grad school. So it was like, fine, and it was a good panel, and they had questions and stuff. But at the end, I like asked one of my undergrad colleagues, and I was like, hey, I was on this panel. There was literally only one person that wanted to go to grad school. There was like five panelists, and there was like 20 audience members. Like, what's going on? And she was like, oh, yeah. So most of the clubs here, like the first semester, you're a probationary member and you have to attend a certain number of events and you have to get enough points by going to enough events. And I think the panel that you were on was like at a very convenient time. So a lot of members came to get their points. And I was like, even though they have no desire to go to grad school and like already have a job offer from Facebook. And she was like, yeah, I know. So then I was like, you know what? I'm not being on any panels for undergrads at my university, not because I'm a bad person, but because I've been burned. I've been on like probably 10 panels, so that's like plenty for my time here, even if I stayed here for 10 years, which I will not. But now I just tell them, subscribe to my podcast. And if you want to know about how to have a great summer internship or how to get into grad school, listen to my summer internship episode or my grad school episode. And they like forward it along to their students. And once they even gave students a point for listening to our episode, I will not appear on panels about going to grad school. I will appear on panels about other issues that I'm passionate about, but I will not appear on panels about going to graduate school because I'm over it.
And you're getting to another point, which is that protecting that time in your PhD and your personal life. So, you know, you only have so much time in a day. Mm-hmm. And especially in the second half of your PhD, like this is the time where now you've learned a lot about your project, you've learned a lot of techniques. This is a time where you have the opportunity to crunch through some of that work. And I still wanted to protect my own personal time, like sleeping.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the choice to be selective at that time. And I mean, you get asked to do so many, like, one-day things.
Yeah, which
one
can be
tests.
Really amazing opportunities.
Yes.
If you were selective.
Right. So really think about, like, what do you really care about, or what are you really interested in?
Or what will ultimately benefit you. Like,
right.
I'm on this university-wide committee, okay? It sounds extremely impressive, and it's a topic that I'm passionate about, lab safety. We should have a lab safety episode, okay?
Oh, that'd be great.
And now I'm on this committee, so like, whew! Okay? It sounds pretty impressive. It's like a topic I'm interested in, and it meets four times a year for 1.5 hours, and they serve lunch. So, boom, this checks all the boxes, right? Like, it's not that much time. It's very valuable. It's meaningful to me. I'm helping make sure people don't die in labs, which is, like, very important. I'm making Berkeley safer. I'm one of the very few women on this panel, so I can like bring a diverse perspective. You know, like it's important.
Yeah. Yes.
There's been other opportunities
Right.
where would have been equal amount of time, but literally no benefit to me,
Right.
which I have said thank you, but no thank you. Why don't you ask such and such second year student
Who
who
might
doesn't
be
know better yet?
interested? Yes. Which actually brings another good point, which is what are some of the benefits of participating in extracurriculars in graduate school?
Let's break it down. Okay, should we just run through our list and then we can talk about the most interesting ones?
Yeah, let's run through the list and then
Okay.
talk about some examples of our
Sweet.
own.
All right, so number one, hard to get experience that is valuable for industry jobs elsewhere. Okay? No one else is gonna be like, you're not gonna learn from lab how
Yeah.
to like, I don't know what you need to know for an industry job, which is bad because I want one, but
Case in point.
well, or industry jobs, right? Like, if you want to go into science policy and be a science policy advisor, you're
Right.
not going to learn that at the bench, okay? If you want to be a science writer and write for, like, science news at your local newspaper, you're not going to learn that at the bench, okay?
If you want to work for a science-involved nonprofit, again, there's a lot more that you can learn outside of the
Absolutely.
bench.
Number two, it can be beneficial for academic careers.
Yeah, so
Yeah, no one.
again, if you're looking in the future to work in a research-intensive institution, the bottom line is going to be a research. But the
Everyone has great
extracurricular,
research, though, so at the end of the
right,
day.
some of these outside activities can push you a little bit over the edge
Oh,
against, and
absolutely. And
especially if you are interested in working in a teaching-focused institution, doing a lot of teaching activities is really useful
absolutely.
outside of the lab.
Right. Okay, what else? Oh, we kind of mentioned this, but literally for especially things that are more outside of what I would say traditionally are thought of as post-PhD jobs, but that are absolutely where PhDs belong, like nonprofits, science policy, science editing. It's like the only way you're going to get experience with that. Oh, here's an important one. Personal fulfillment.
Yes.
You know what? You can't put a price on that.
It's hard.
Okay?
It
If
is
it
hard to
brings you joy,
quantify.
lean in.
But remember that being in graduate school is very, very optional school.
Oh, yes.
And so if you're there, hopefully you're there because you're genuinely
Like, hopefully, graduate
interested.
school brings you some degree of personal fulfillment. But you know what? On a semester to semester basis, it doesn't.
Yeah, it goes in waves. It
Yeah,
goes in
it
waves.
flows.
So, I mean, clearly, if you're willing to commit to a PhD, you have interests that you have committed passionate interests in something.
Yeah.
And so it only makes sense that you would want to do that, have those passionate interests in other things too.
Absolutely. And also another one, because you care about helping others.
Yeah.
So I think this is part of the reason why we started this podcast, because we were like seeing these conversations that we were having privately or with one-on-one situations that weren't happening elsewhere. And it's like, yes, the podcast is fun, but we do it because we want to make a resource for others. And like now when they say be on my panel, and I'm like, I have helped you by just listening to our imposter syndrome episode. You know, like helping others is very important. And also, I think this is where first, second, and third year graduate students and older students, but this is where graduate students can really shine because when you come into graduate school, you first of all have a fresh perspective on things that are happening at your university. And you can bring very valuable change if you're dedicated and you want to, but there's no obligation, obviously. You can bring very valuable change to the way your community does things, especially in places where academia is horrendously behind where it needs to be, which I think about as issues of equity, diversity, and inclusion. So these are places where, because you care about helping others, you want to make it easier for students who are from underrepresented backgrounds to succeed in science. Like, absolutely, it's an excellent reason to participate in extracurriculars. And it's
Right.
incredible. Yeah.
On its own. And on paper, service is part of the role of academia.
Oh, totally.
And if you are looking to be faculty, that is should in theory continue to be part of your role is
Right.
service.
And also, as you become an older graduate student, faculty will, even if you don't want to become a faculty, right, as you're competing with other older graduate students for opportunities, like having been able to say, like, I played the academic game by doing, there's a section on my resume called University and Community Service, where I talk about, like, this university-wide committee and, like, this other, like, biomaterials situation thing that I did and, like, whatever, right? So as you become an older graduate student, participation and not just, but, like contributions toward academic service, it's, like, what professors look for among themselves. So they're also looking for it among, like, senior students to, like, go up for awards and opportunities. I mean, we both won an award.
Yeah.
We both do a lot of service.
Yes.
I mean, I think that five people won an award that five people will fight for.
Yes.
But, like, I think that as an older student, like, when faculty start to think of you, like, as a leader, that's what they look for is university service. Okay.
My favorite one, a very useful and important networking opportunity.
Absolutely.
I find that you make so much stronger connections when you are working with other people to accomplish a task than to even go to a panel, or I shouldn't use a panel, to even go to a networking focused event.
Oh yeah.
Because you have to accomplish this task together, you have to get to know the person, and they also see how you work and function.
Yep.
And those kinds of connections you can definitely come back and revisit later in your career.
Absolutely.
And similarly, on networking, it's a great way to get connected to other groups, which can provide you with academic opportunities, job opportunities, and also just general support for well-being in graduate school, especially groups that are designed for specific communities. So I think SWE or GWE are good examples of this. It's a good way to get word of mouth opportunities.
Oh,
is what I'm trying to say.
To understand the hidden curricula for success in STEM and overcome your imposter syndrome.
Yes, that.
That is the topic of one of our best ever received live shows.
It's very hard to quantify the value of these connections, but anecdotally, I can tell you that in the last year or so, I've been asking people, how did you find your postdoc position? And the answer usually goes like this. I went to this thing, and then I met this person who knew this other person who told me about this other PI who then had a friend that knows the PI who then connected me, and they're like, yeah, we're kind of looking for someone. What do you think? It's so, like, okay, great. First of all, how can I follow that pattern? But you can see that the more connections that are available to you, the more likely you are to get benefit or provide someone else with a benefit through those
and
connections.
Another really important aspect of participation in extracurricular activities in graduate school. So it used to be, we're going to get into all of our past graduate school extracurricular experiences. We're going to like weigh in on them and we're going to like give like pros and cons. But I used to be a peer advisor for the department. So a lot of first year students would come to me and still do, even though I'm not that anymore. I guess I just have one of those personas. Come to me and be like, oh, Sally, like, here's my struggles. And I'll be like, all right, I'm going to give you advice. And what I would tell a lot of students if they were struggling with feelings of belonging in graduate school, feeling like it's hard to make friends, feeling like it's hard to have conversation with someone that doesn't seem like a competition about who got into what rotation and what competitive lab, but it's like, that I know as an old student that lab sucks anyway, but I can't just tell you that. It won't make you feel better. You know, so I always tell students, like, to go to, like, an extracurricular group. So I would always recommend the Graduate Women in Engineering group at UC Berkeley for students who identify as women or gender minorities. Even just broader interest groups within Berkeley, like women in AI. Like, even if you're not that interested in AI, like, you and me both went to an AI conference for the day, and it was great. And, you know, there's a lot of groups, especially at the graduate student level, like, anyone, they're, like, desperate for people to come to their events, right? So just show up, and you'll make friends. It's not like an undergrad where everything is, like, a competition to get into these groups, at least at Berkeley. So if you're feeling like graduate school is sort of challenging, or if you're feeling, like, the interpersonal struggles of graduate school, and finding it hard to make those networks outside of, like, a competitive department or a competitive lab environment, absolutely seek out some extracurricular groups. And if you aren't sure what groups are out there, most of them have a presence on Facebook. And then there's probably some grand university list of groups that you'll have to sort through, like the undergrad trumpet club or whatever, to find like one that's quasi-relevant to you. But I would say go to quasi-relevant clubs and just check it out.
Yeah, you can always not go again.
Yeah, and just say, can I get added to the listserv?
Yes.
And the worst case scenario is 3 months later you ask to be removed, okay? Best case scenario is to meet lifelong friends and have a new perspective on life. So those are some reasons to participate in extracurricular activities in graduate school.
I think it's important to understand that the role of extracurriculars in graduate school is different than in undergraduate. So for me, when I was in undergraduate, I did a lot of different extracurriculars or outreach or service. And there were two things that I wish I would have realized sooner in graduate school. One is that professional service is service. I for some reason felt like, oh, participating as part of this committee for the department doesn't count as real service because it's for the department.
Oh, no, no, no.
So
the department
like
can drain your
close,
time. It's
close
definitely
enough
service.
To, yeah. So for some reason it felt like too close to grad school to not be grad school. But but it's important to realize that if it's not part of your formal training, it can be service.
Right.
And professional service is very important for career building.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that it's not going to have the same benefits as it does as your transition from high school to college or college to graduate school. So people, so for example, like we mentioned, NSF, half of the application is broader impacts. Honestly, past that, there are very few awards or positions or careers that care that much about what extracurriculars you have done.
Agreed.
Which is why it's important to be selective and really think about why you want to do those activities. Not that you shouldn't do them, but just understand why you want to do them.
Yeah.
It's not just going to purely like monetize into.
Yeah, there's no like points. Like, you don't get like brownie points for doing any of this in graduate school.
Right.
And honestly, you don't really in undergrad either. Like, I think all these undergrads think that by being like the publicity chair of whatever honor society that they're going to like get into graduate school because of this. It's like, no. Okay.
And you,
but
most likely you're going to get a bigger benefit if you're focused within a few things than if you're spreading yourself really thin amongst a lot of activities.
Yeah.
And on that note, graduate school is a long time. So, you know, you don't have to do everything all the time, which again,
yes.
If you have a semester where you really need to finish projects or you really.
Quals.
Yeah,
listen
quals
to our
is a great
episode.
Time
Ooh,
to
buddy.
Take a step back. It's okay to take a step back. And
right.
When you get to toward the end of your PhD and all of a sudden you've listed like the four or five activities that you've done across the span of 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it sounds impressive, but you weren't all doing them all for 5 years.
Right, exactly. It's going to be more than enough benefit to you and CV building, etc. So, you know, don't feel like you have to be super person at whatever this is.
And so should we get into some of the stuff that we've done in graduate school and how it kind of good, like, experiences that were ultimately beneficial and less so?
Yes.
And then how they kind of fit into the framework of why we participated in them or, like, how we thought that they would be good and then they turned out bad and, like...
Yes.
So that students, the listeners can learn from our failures.
Yes.
Okay.
I can start with a good and a bad example.
Hit us. Let's do it.
Okay. So in bioengineering department here at Berkeley, students participate in the admissions committee for the graduate program.
Mm.
And so I was a part of this for 2 years. And I found that to checkmark all of the benefits that we talked about earlier, it's something that I just genuinely enjoy doing. I care a lot about students and seeing what students come into the department and building the department through that way. I
like
think it's
full of quality people who care about the right things.
Yeah, exactly. It's a way that, you know, as a student, I could have a lot of influence. I think it's interesting. I enjoy writing and... with that, enjoy reading other people's writing.
And you want to be a professor, so reading 140 recommendation letters kind of shows you how to write, but like
That's
in the
exactly right.
American style, like read between the lines if a student is like a 20 out of 10 or like an 8 out of 10 or like a 2 out of 10.
Right. So there's a lot of benefits for my long-term career goals. And then it does take a lot of time, but it's the kind of time requirement that I enjoy the most, where it's in a block. It's just like sit down for, this many hours and read a lot, and it's flexible, so I could do it if I was flying, or I could do it if I just woke up at a weird time of day or
And it's like
something.
over a 6 week period, and then you're done.
Right, exactly. So for me, that was really beneficial. In contrast, another activity that I did was in the complex that I live in. There, let me see.
Like in our housing community.
In our housing community.
We, of course, are neighbors.
Okay,
I
I'll
mean,
just say, in my housing community, there is a garden space that is available to everyone that's living in the housing community. And so I come from an agricultural background. I was really interested
you were
in
raised on a farm.
I was raised in a farm. So I care about gardening. I think it's interesting, and I'm excited to help other people be interested in it and do it. So I started off as one of the members. That was fine, and then eventually was working in the manager role, and
The
that's
slippery slope of
there it is.
leadership,
Yeah.
people,
So
tread with caution.
here's where it started going bad, because so a lot of the people, it basically turned into way, way, way more time commitment than it should have been, and it was not benefiting any of those topics that we discussed. So it was a lot of time sending emails. It was honestly a lot of time just being stressed about sending emails. So yeah, so cutting that out was an excellent decision, and in retrospect, it's probably going to have very little effect on my future work, other than that maybe I have a lot more experience in dealing with conflict.
Yeah, do you have any choice stories from the garden that you want to share with our listeners? There's some gems.
Wow. I don't know if I actually don't think I could talk about it for legal
Oh, there's
reasons.
legal reasons she can't talk about the most dramatic drama that happened at the community garden, you guys. This is why she dropped out like it was hot and was like, I'm just gonna plant my plants. I'm not gonna be in charge of other people planting their plants or not. Oh
Yeah, I'm just gonna stay clear of
Well, we'll
getting
leave it
into
in
the
that it was for legal
details.
reasons, but we'll take it out where I was like, talk about the. All
Yeah.
right. So for me, I think a good example is this podcast. Okay, let's go through the list. Okay. Hard to get experience that I want to get in the lab. Check. Beneficial for academic careers. I mean, Kayla's gonna be a professor. I would listen to this podcast and then hire her to help my department be its best self. Get exposure to stuff like science communication. Personal fulfillment. This is very fulfilling. Helping others. I hope you feel you've been helped. Networking opportunity. I mean, we basically just invite people that we want to meet onto the podcast as our guests. Like, hello. Getting connected with other groups. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it checks all the boxes. It's very fulfilling. Now we have money from grants, so we don't have to spend as much time on the parts of the podcast that are not fulfilling. So, like, spending 9 hours editing.
Yes,
Very unfulfilling.
very
I'm
much.
surprised this podcast even continued. Like, after we just got so sick of editing
Yes,
episodes.
that was.
Or, like, we had editors that were bad, where we would have to be like, at minute 5, 27, cut until minute 6, 17.
But by the time that you've typed that,
You might as well
you
do it
could have just cut
yourself,
it
and 9 hours
yourself.
have elapsed.
Yes.
Okay. So, that's a good example. For my bad examples, I would say, without getting into. So, like, Kayla mentioned our department has like an amazing student organization, which has many elected positions. And I think because the positions are elected, and there's kind of like a hierarchy of positions, like obviously being the president is the best, and also being on admissions committee is the best. And then because it's like the most selective and you have to, you know, and then there's other ones that are like pretty forward facing in terms of facing the other students. So you can, like, if you want to be president, then it would behoove you to be on the visit weekend committee so that all the incoming students can, like, meet you and then vote for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not as dramatic as I'm making it sound, but also, like, if you're, yeah. So I think because positions are elected, people, including myself, are like, I must run for positions. And then if I'm elected to the position, I must do it.
And so then you ran for 4 positions and got elected to 3 and did all of them?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, as I got and became an older student, I said no, not only to positions when they were like, please run for this position, Sally. And I was like, no, thank you.
Right.
I really appreciate the invitation, but I'm not going to. Or when you get multiple positions to be like, no, thank you to this committee. I'll do this thing that's more in line with my interests.
Right.
So, like, one that really worked for me and that I really liked was being peer advising because, I mean, this whole podcast is peer advising, right? Like,
you have a great opportunity to influence new students.
Yeah, and new students are the future. So, like, changing the future. That was very exciting.
That's right.
Other positions were less of a good fit for me, my personality, my skills, and how I like to spend my time. And some of them I said no to. So that was, I felt very proud of myself. But this is another thing. I think when it comes to service, yeah. And I noticed this because for a long time, I was my department's only student in my lab. So when the department needed a representative from my lab, it would necessarily have to be me.
Mm.
And I realized over time that my PI got a lot better at protecting my time.
Mm.
So, like, he made me not be the safety officer anymore. Bless. I'm the safety officer emerita. Because it's academia, right?
Oh, my God.
So, and, like, he stopped sending representatives from our labs, i.e. me, to, like, random pointless things. And, like, would sometimes send a person that wasn't even in the department to a thing for our department so that I wouldn't have to go. And so seeing him protect my time in very meaningful ways,
right,
really gave me permission to do the same thing when some random person from the department asked me to do something.
Right.
Because, I mean, obviously I love the department and I give back and I fight for change within the system. But, like, if it really has no benefit to me or anyone and they ultimately just need a body in the room, I can't be that body every single time. Like, we have a new student in bioengineering, so she always goes.
Again, it's being selective and protecting your time and
right.
doing service opportunities that you care most about, or at least not taking all of the ones that just need something to be done.
Yeah, and I think on the line of university department service, it was really great in my PI to protect my own time. But I also think that, like, I definitely have an opt-in personality where I'm like, sure, I'll do it, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
I would say when it comes to department service, if you haven't stepped up before, like, step up. And you might
right.
say, like, oh, students come to me all the time. And they're like, because, I mean, I was a peer advisor and then all the first years run for positions and then they don't win and they're, like, sad. You don't have to be in an – and, like, some departments don't even have student groups, right? So, like, you don't have to be in an elected position to, like, help.
Right.
Or to be like, hey, there's a conference that the department's organizing. I'm going to, like, pass out flyers. You know, like
– Right.
It shouldn't always be the same person who are volunteering or when they ask for someone to help set up after orientation.
That's right, yeah.
You know, like, be the one who steps up, especially if you haven't done it before. You'll meet people.
Right.
It's like 30 seconds of your day. I mean, 30 minutes of your day, but it's, like, important. And that way, we're, like, spreading the burden of the blah parts of service across more people. And hopefully the excellent parts, too, because everyone should have an opportunity to contribute meaningfully.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so if you haven't done any of the service,
lean in, people.
Please do.
Yeah, and it goes to, like, if you want to become a faculty,
well,
if you want to get
it,
exactly,
you,
if you want to get
any job that you want to do, it's
like doing these opportunities shows that you, like,
you invest,
are a team player.
You're not just trying to get in and get out as soon as possible, that you're going to take initiative and be invested in the whole work, cohesive work.
Yeah. And that you're, like, caring about your community.
Yeah.
And you don't have to fight for change within the system, but being in the system, that is a benefit.
Yes.
And, like, even in the time that we've been in our program for N number of years, so, no, we're 6 years now, so we're over it.
It's official.
It's a badge of – wear it with pride, okay?
Yes. Yes, actually.
Because I remember when I was a first year, I think of the 6 years, okay? They were old AF and scary AF. And
yes.
It's exciting and exhilarating for me to think about the little first-year students – You know, maybe some of them were born in the 2000s. I guess not yet, but
Don't
eventually.
Say that.
To think of the little first-year students and how they think of me is so scary. No, they don't, because we gave a presentation at orientation, and so they know.
They know our
They
shenanigans.
Know, yeah. I think at the end of
they
our presentation.
Probably know too much.
At the end of our presentation, Kayla just goes, well, good luck with your PhD. Bye. And they, like, lost it. Anyway, okay. So, this has been super fun. It's been a while since we haven't had a guest here, and we can just tell it to you like it is. let's wrap up our advice.
If you're on the fence in general, go for it. Knowing your limits, knowing what you really want to do, thinking about how to be selective, and recognizing what are the potential reasons and benefits that you want to do some activity, then go for it.
Yeah. And, like, compared to undergrad, right? Or, well, I should say, compared to high school, okay, you're not just doing activity to check them off a list. In graduate school, extracurricular activities should be something that you think diligently about and that you care about and that you have thought about how it will benefit you. And that sounds, like, very utilitarian, but, like, the benefit to you can be fun or something that isn't lab.
Right.
Right. And that's something that we forgot to say about why we love doing this podcast as our main extracurricular. And it's because, okay, on a given day, I mean, Kayla, you're a star, so your number is going to be, like, super high. It's going to make everyone else feel bad about themselves.
I'll tell you my rule of the day.
But on a given day,
I tell
most
all my
things are going to fail.
This. I tell all my students this. I call it the 20% rule. If any on any given day, if more than 20% of my experiments are a success, then it's been a successful day.
Right. But, like, it could be grad. I mean, that's stochastic, right? So there could be,
right.
like, 2 months where literally nothing works. Or, you know what? Let's be real here.
You
there,
might have
The
three.
Faculty have hung up. There could be 2 years. The faculty have tuned out. There could be 2 years where nothing goes right, okay? So by having this podcast, it's like we put in our time, we put in our creativity and our intellect, and, like, bleep, bloop, 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 5 hours of work later, we have a podcast episode, and people are like, I listened to your podcast. It was amazing. So it's like through extracurriculars, you can put in your time, effort, talent, and creativity and get out positive feelings of success. Which is not a given in a lab environment. And if it is, like, good for you.
It's a good balance for most people.
Yeah. So that's, like, a very important benefit. And because you know that, like we've told you, how extracurriculars can be challenging but meaningful, blah, 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 if you have peers or mentees who are very involved in extracurricular activities, like, roll out, support, you know, subscribe to their podcast, like, attend the event that they spent, like, all semester organizing.
Yeah.
Like, support them in their extracurricular endeavors. The last advice, without being utilitarian, but consider how opportunities benefit you. So I think that's it.
So good luck with your PhD. No,
no.
I'm kidding.
That's your new catchphrase. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. And we want to know about your experiences with extracurricular activities. You can reach out to us on Twitter at DoubleSheLooksPod, on Instagram, DoubleSheLooksPodcast, and email us, DoubleSheLooksPodcast@gmail.com. But most importantly, tell your friends and loved ones about Double She Looks, and consider to tell them to listen to this episode when they come to you with their struggles of extracurriculars.
That's right.
Because I think this is something that all grad students have to go through, and, like, if you can learn it by not having to experience it yourself, it's all the better.
Yep. So thanks for listening to this episode.
Yeah, thanks for listening to this episode. Thank you.